comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Do you feel like your sleep patterns are different from the rest of the world? Do you sometimes feel the unwanted urge or need to fall asleep during the day, even when you need to be awake? Do you also feel just too wide awake to fall or stay asleep during the night? If you are blind, this could be a real sleep problem related to a lack of light needed to keep your body in sync. Learn more about an ongoing clinical research study that is evaluating a new investigational treatment for this type of sleep problem. When calling, you can also complete a short sleep survey. When calling, you must be between 18 and 75 years of age and totally blind. Volunteers will be compensated for their participation in the clinical study and will receive study-related medication, medical evaluations, and transportation at no cost. If you or someone you know might be affected, call toll-free 1-888-389-7033 or email info@non24registry.com. That's info@non24registry.com. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 104 for June 2nd, 2011. This is Michael Loff. Our topic tonight is this month in access technology for the month of May 2011. Our guests this evening are two gentlemen with a lot of valuable insights and opinions, which is what we love on our show. Curtis Chong and Michael Barber both joining us again this evening, and we welcome both of you to the presentation. Before we get into tonight's topics, we're going to mention that coming up next week, June 9th, if you have any problems with or questions about getting a better quality of sleep, we will be speaking with some experts to help sort all this out. There's a lot of things we can do to improve our sleep. There's a lot of things that we just take for granted, don't think about, having TV and lights on in the room or drinking caffeine too late. There's a number of things we can do to improve sleep. So joining us will be Joseph Hall, who we've had on before from Harvard University and Brigham and Women's Hospital. And also joining us will be William Hoos, who will be representing Vanda Pharmaceuticals. They have an exciting new development for those having difficulty either going to sleep or staying to sleep through the entire night and or just staying awake during the day to, you know, get their work done. It's amazing. I've spoken with attorneys and many people who have these challenges. And so we're going to talk about some ways to overcome that next week on June 9th on Tech Chat 105. But now for tonight's show, again, we're speaking with Curtis Chong and Michael Barber, and we're going to look at some of the big stories, what we think some of the top 20 I picked out, at least that got buzz through social networking and other things for the month of May 2011. And I think the first one, to me, this was the top story. I find this totally fascinating and interesting. And this being that that Google has lobbied the state of Nevada to allow self-driving cars, autonomous driving, where the vehicle actually you know, takes care of things, and of course, a user can override it if and when needed. And of course, the relevance to us is the process or the thought that, well, now maybe blind folks can actually have a vehicle to drive, or will there be limitations saying that user must have some sight to intervene when the vehicle makes a mistake, which also brings up an interesting point that even sighted folks, if you have a vehicle that's doing it 99.9% of the time, you know, they're going to be off texting and on the phone and doing things they shouldn't be and not paying attention to the road. But the benefits, obviously, overcoming problems with sleep or mistakes made by the other guy. And so I think this is a very interesting topic. So I want to start with this, and I'm going to start with you, Curtis, because before getting started this evening, you definitely have a thought or two on this and our society accepting this concept of self-driving vehicles.
Okay, good evening. I'm glad to be here. Let me say, first of all, about self-driving vehicles that I think it's a splendid idea, which will, if it's adopted by our society in general, in theory anyway, it should improve safety on the roads. It has nothing very much to do with the blind. As the National Federation of the Blind has demonstrated earlier in the year, technologies are being built for non-autonomous vehicles. But in the end, it is very possible, I think, as a society, if our society will accept this, that driving on super high-speed highways, for example, where you're trying to move things at a very fast rate, faster than what people can handle, could be handled by autonomous vehicles. I don't know that the technology is ready yet, but I think that it is an interesting idea that should not be ruled out of hand anyway as we move forward. Of course, I work with computers that fail all of the time, so one begins to wonder what the failure rate on an autonomous vehicle would be. But hey, that's a different question that's going to come up later on.
Michael, any thoughts on that?
You know, I am quite excited about the Google automated car. I think there's definitely a place for those things. And I don't know, you know, when it'll come to fruition. I don't know when it's going to, you know, be something that people are going to be using. I would like to think that maybe in my lifetime I might be able to get behind the wheel of one of those things or whatever it's going to be. You know, I have a lot of questions about it, of course. For instance, I assume you'd be able to either use voice input to tell it to the destination, or you could punch in the destination that you wanted to go to. I was thinking about things like, so how are you going to find a parking place in a crowded shopping mall? How would that happen? I can see where it would avoid cars. I'm sure it would have those sensors and so forth. But I don't know. There's a lot of questions to answer. I think it would definitely give us some freedom that we haven't had. I mean, obviously we can go where we want to go on with buses and what have you. But this will give us a newfound freedom as blind people, and I'm really excited about this. So I'm sure that we're going to hear more and more about this.
Yeah, of course, there's also...
Hold on a minute. I want to say that I will not assume that an autonomous vehicle is going to give freedom to the blind. Why? Because they're not designing these autonomous vehicles for use by blind people. They're designing them for use by everybody else. And given what I know about how technologies are designed, and given the history that we've faced in terms of all the technologies that are coming out there, I don't think we stand much of a hope of having non-visual access to the controls of that vehicle unless we get with Google early on and say to them, if you're going to design an autonomous vehicle, you better darn well make sure that it can be operated non-visually. That's not even on the radar screen, is my guess right now.
Point taken, but I think we can get in there and should get in there and make sure that we're going to have access.
Well, that's a good point, because unlike Android, we can't have partial access. That's for sure. I mean, you know, it's going to have to be an all or nothing, certainly. So that's a point very well taken. We'll certainly see how that pans out, or if anyone's been in communications with Google. Of course, if they are, they're probably under non-disclosure agreement. But yeah, I would love to see this. What are the controls? How does it work? What is the interface? What is the operating system? You know, there's a lot more. I'd certainly like to learn about it myself. Also,
another thing that I was just thinking about, you know, I was watching a documentary one time about, you know, the jet aircrafts that we fly in, and you know, those are quite computer controlled, and they were talking in there about when the computer just flat took over and would not relinquish control to the pilot, and how much difficulty they were having. Now, that's been a few years ago, but that's something to be concerned about as well.
Well, on that, I've read some articles about actually flying cars that actually do take to the air, which, of course, my concern there, what if they didn't properly anticipate storms, you know? So there's a lot of interesting developments, but Curtis made a good point about higher speed travel, and that's what we're seeing in Europe, is the design where some of these vehicles are just designed to follow someone ahead. So there's a leader that is actually controlled by a human, but the other vehicles are simply designed to follow the leader. Very interesting stuff. Related to Google, an article here saying access to Google's calendar application. And again, we say kind of. Again, here's a third party entity trying to solve what Google should be doing itself. But that's just my two cents. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this?
This is a part of a trend which I'm beginning to observe going on in the general marketplace, in which since certain websites or application developers are not making their software or systems accessible to the blind, third-party individuals or companies are beginning to take on the challenge. And I have some real optimism and skepticism about this trend. Take Pandora Radio, for example. Pandora Radio, as we all know, doesn't really work well for screen reader users. And so what did this guy do? He developed the HOPE program. And Google Calendar doesn't work really good with for blind people using screen readers. So this third-party company developed an interface for the blind that would make it better. Some people don't like how the Outlook calendar works in its native mode. So GW Micro developed the calendar interface to make it more efficient for the blind. And the reservation I have about this is not that it's a bad idea, but that it essentially takes these other people off the hook and relieves them of the responsibility of doing something which they ought to be doing in the first place, which is making their stuff accessible to everyone. And so is this the beginning of a trend where accessibility will begin to shift away from the developers and the designers and moving more toward third parties? Or are we seeing a combination of these efforts where some developers make their stuff accessible and other people leave it to third parties? I don't know. As I say, I have some mixed feelings about all of that.
And of course, my concern is... Go ahead, Michael.
I've looked at this just a little bit, not very much. I think it was last week I started to, and then had a personal issue in our family where I kind of wasn't doing much with it, but... I think I agree with Curtis on this one. I really don't want to see these people relieved of their responsibility. I'm glad, in one respect, that that the third-party people got in there and are working with this, but I just would really like to see Google, their feet held to the fire as far as accessibility is concerned. I think they need to know that we're serious about accessibility and that we hope and expect them to step up to the plate.
Well, again, my thought would be you a great example with Pandora and the HOPE program written for it. The problem is, right, not only does it let the developers off the hook, but they make one change and this third-party interface is broken. And so the whole app no longer works and they have to go back to ground zero and start over and make the necessary modifications. And who's to say at one point they upgrade the back end UI so that these third-party entities no longer work at all. So it's better than nothing, and I applaud the folks who take the time to do it, but it's it's a half-baked access and easily broken, no different than text-only websites. Can't think of a better example than that myself. Any of you have thoughts on Google's Chromium operating system? That will be hitting the ground this summer. Actually, there's betas already out there. I know a few folks who have played with it. Of course, you do have a screen reader built into it that you can deploy. I believe it's Control-Alt-Z with the log on screen. Have any of you done anything or read anything about that?
I will say that I haven't, and it's mostly because usually when you hear about all this new technological stuff, it's rather disgusting in a way or discouraging. You know, we always hear about new things coming out, and I think from a purely technological standpoint, what Google is doing where a lot of your data and a lot of your software exists in the cloud is a splendid technological approach if you don't think about people who are blind who have to use it. If you start thinking about the blind who have to use it, the first instinct or the first reaction I always have is, I bet you nobody has thought about accessibility. So I'm actually encouraged that at least we're hearing rumblings that maybe there is going to be a built-in screen reader. That is a good, positive sign. However, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, and I will not get really optimistic and excited about it until somebody can show me the thing working and show me that, in fact, all of the cool functions are there that I can do on that computer that I'm doing on other computers, and then I'll get excited and think Google has done a great thing. Right now, when we're looking at what Google has done overall, I think what you could say is that it's a mixed bag. There's some things they've done that worked fairly well. There are other things such as Google Calendar and Google Docs that they've done that have not worked as well as they should. And yet, you look at Gmail, for example, and even though it's really hard to sign up for it, It's amazing the number of blind people who are using a Gmail and other, you know, other people using Gmail today. And so, as I say, their track record is mixed, and I am largely skeptical of them because I find that there's no consistency of accessibility across the board with them.
Hey, Michael, any thoughts?
Yeah, I haven't tried this one yet, but I think it was last year or the year before. Somebody had developed supposedly a screen reader that was supposed to, you know, make your web pages talk and so forth. And I went to it, and I wish I could remember the name of it, and I can't. It doesn't come to mind right now. But I remember that we didn't have much control over anything. I mean, yeah, the site talked all right, but you didn't have a whole heck of a lot of control over what was going on, you know, how to, you know, as far as navigation and some of the things we can do, for instance, with, you know, with JAWS or Window Eyes or System Access, as far as that's concerned. And so a lot of that I found was missing, which kind of took away from the joy of using the thing.
If or when Google shows us that it really does work, or if somebody can show a Chromium computer where you can do a lot of cool things with a screen reader, I will be the first person to get up there and jump up and down for joy. But, you know, so many times we hear promises about things that are going to happen, and what you find is that you get a half-baked approach. So, you know, think about things like hands, eyes-free operation of equipment in automobiles or that kind of thing. And people think, oh, wonderful, it's accessible. But it's not, because a lot of the basic functions are not meant to be operated hands-free. And so you get half accessibility, or you get something that talks some of the time. And so I remain a skeptic until Google can show us overall that they've done something positive and that really works and that we can get up there and get excited about it. And then if we have some commitment that says, not only will we show you a built-in screen reader, but we will show you some wonderful accessible applications that work absolutely wonderful with this thing. And when that happens, I'll be one of the first cheerleaders out there telling them that they've done a great thing. But right now, I don't know enough about it. And given their past track record, I think, justifiably skeptical.
Yeah, fair enough. It sounds like that's something we should review on an upcoming podcast or something, do a segment on, or maybe even a tech chat. Get enough people when it's closer to official release and some folks that have really gotten under the hood and can say, hey, this thing is actually worth dedicating a computer to and doing something with.
And I find myself wondering who are, you know, when they're developing this stuff, what blind guys are they talking to? You know, who is this being discussed with? Who's testing it? Have they talked to the National Federation of the Blind? I don't know.
Yeah, good points, because of non-disclosure agreements, we certainly don't know which individuals are involved in the testing process. But it is there, and the link we have right up here on the screen or on the show notes, folks, they have a dedicated computer. You can run it as a VMware image, or you can actually boot from a CD and play around with it if you like. So that's there. Another one maybe you haven't played with, but I think a very interesting concept. The title is Tiny USB Stick PC Costing Only $25 with an HDMI port on one end for video and the other end taking a keyboard. And again, the motivation of this product was to give every student in school their own computer. And of course, this rings of Serotech, you know, with the actual key, as we call it. So you actually have a USB stick, but you're taking it not only to be a screen reader, but actually its own dedicated computer, so that each student has their own tool for $25 a piece. Now, here in my community of Evansville, Indiana, they actually are giving out netbooks to students. And of course, as you can imagine, what we have is a situation where students are using it for things that they shouldn't be. Well, imagine that. But if any of you read or have any thoughts on this concept of a $25 self-contained USB stick computer.
I love the idea. I want to put a screen reader on it, and I want to go with it. I want to get it to work, and I want to begin to use it. Let's go for it. I want to see it work.
Sure cut down the cost of computing, that's for sure. It sounds like a novel idea to me.
Yeah, I mean, the specs...
Now, nowhere in this... did they say there was a screen reader, did they? So this is just a computer, right? But there's no screen reader that, is it Windows? What operating system is it? You know, are we going to have it?
I think it was Linux. Didn't I read Linux someplace in that?
Yeah, I'm looking through it here to see exactly what it runs, but yeah, it is a variant of Linux. So as of right now, right, there is no screen reader, but you can guess probably some of the ingenious individuals are certainly looking at it to see what potential it might have based on, I think it's 128 meg of RAM and so forth, to see, you know, what could be done with this device, or maybe the next iteration of it that offers a little bit more, or the capabilities to actually expand so you have more ports to work with. You know, maybe actually have four ports.
It definitely needs an audio port, right? I mean, it doesn't have audio. It has HDMI. It has a keyboard interface. But where's the audio output? That we're going to need that. Otherwise, this isn't going to work.
Well, that was my concern as well. That you either have four ports so that you can have sound, or if the sound is actually ported through the HDMI port. Some of the HDMI specs do include sound with the video capability. So, yeah, still some questions to be answered in this front. But I like the concept of, you know, imagine this is a tool now every blind person, employed or not, has at least something. Or, you know, in the school system, now you have something to get in there. And so I certainly hope the and throw it out there to those with the brilliance, the brain power, and the technical savvy to look at this, and if at all it can be made to talk and be a viable tool to give access, by all means, I'd be right there with you beta testing it and, you know, seeing what all this thing can do. Maybe even contacting the individual who created this and expressing those concerns. Let's see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I know both of you had opinion on this. Microsoft, and we talked about this before, we didn't know who it was going to be. Facebook was looking at it, Google was looking at it, but Microsoft, even though they already have audio and video chat technology, they decide, because of its deployment, the number of computers that are using it, they decide to buy Skype for a whopping $8.5 billion, plus the debt that Skype already has. Thoughts on this one?
I definitely have some thoughts about this. As I told you before we got started tonight, I have an innate distrust of Microsoft and accessibility. I am really concerned about this. Many of us now enjoy some pretty good accessibility when it comes to Skype. And I am very concerned what Microsoft, if anything, will do. I'm afraid that they could possibly diminish the access we have. I'm not saying they will, but this is my concern. I am, I think about Windows Phone 7. You know, when it came out, when that platform came out, there was no accessibility for blind people. And you know, Microsoft admittedly says it's going to be 18 months, maybe or more. Before we see anything in that area. And so it really concerns me. I am concerned about this.
I would like to be proven wrong. I would like to have Michael be proven wrong, and I would like Microsoft to step up to the plate and say, yes, we will show you a vastly improved and much more accessible Skype experience than you've had before. That's what I'd like to have happen. But I think Mike's point about Windows Phone 7 is well taken. They tend to pick up things for business reasons. And how often have we had business reasons trump accessibility? Far more often than we think it should. And so somehow they're going to take a hold of Skype, and maybe they won't wreck it or anything. But I'm sure not counting on Microsoft to improve the Skype experience anytime soon. Because they just spent $8.5 billion, which, you know, frankly amazes me. That's an awful lot of change there to do. And so I don't know where accessibility is on the radar screen, but I do know that more often than not, whenever I talk to anybody at Microsoft, I hear excuses, and I want to be straight up about it. I hear excuses about why they can't do something or why something isn't going to work properly. And gosh, we're really sorry that this particular feature doesn't work. And so I'm going to say straight up that I am very skeptical that we're going to see any improvement in Skype. And again, I would love to be proven wrong.
Well, here, I'll tell you what, I will say that if I'm proven wrong in the next couple of years or so, Curtis, I'll buy you a prime rib dinner.
Well, so you're just banking on it, that it's going to degrade. Yeah, you look at things like Windows Live 2011, the soon-to-be-deployed Office 365, that I understand has some accessibility issues, and of course, you know, Windows Mobile 7. I mean, what else need you say? And of course, the video out today is showing Windows 8, and there's some concerns about the UI on that. So we'll see when we should get a beta on our hands as a developer and see what they're... You know, they certainly have some better hooking for accessibility, but when I'm talking about operating systems, but for Windows anyway, PC. But yeah, these are some very valid concerns. I guess I'm like, well, it's better than Facebook buying it, but you don't know. There's no way of knowing what's going to happen. You know, if they do all the things they claim, and that be leaving it open to other operating systems, so you can still use it on the Mac or iOS or Android. And if they can't integrate it into Office, so great. You know, you have a you can actually call and speak with someone, do an audio video call. You know, with someone that'd be some great. I know Skype's going to have its own department in Microsoft, so they're serious about it. And yeah, $8.5 billion. I think I heard by the time they take care of the debt involved that Skype already has, it could be up near $10 billion that they're investing into this. And the article that I have here says why they already have this technology, but. Again, it's numbers. Skype is a recognized name, and people will pay for the name recognition. And I just read today someone has reversed engineered the codec, which is kind of the underlying engine that makes the audio and video work so well. And of course, you know, Skype recently has been plagued with more problems. I mean, it's just the audio and video has not been as reliable, say, as it was even 6 months ago. There was an issue last week for many of us where it just simply crashed because they were pushing out a third-party game to be installed. So, of course, Microsoft was quick to say, hey, we don't own it yet. So
But here, look at it this way. Microsoft has a version of Office on the Mac, and Macintosh computers have this free voiceover program, which everybody thinks is wonderful. So you ask yourself, does Microsoft Office, which is, you know, Microsoft has a huge infrastructure devoted to accessibility. They've got lots of people who really believe in it passionately, who have worked there for years. I mean, I won't deny that. But the reality is, and the unfortunate reality is, that the results do not come out. And so you look at Microsoft Office. You can't use it with VoiceOver. And so I think that there's something to be concerned about. You know, we had a Skype app for the iPhone, with another accessible platform. And people say to me that, you know, despite all of this other stuff that you're talking about, Mike, the Skype app on the iPhone works pretty well. Well, what will Microsoft do to that app to make sure that it continues to work as they decide to incorporate more improvements into the service? I'm not too hopeful, I'm afraid.
That's a very good point. So if they get into other operating systems, that we'll do a half-baked attempt in Windows, but anything else, who knows? You're right. Office on the Mac, useless. You know? Very, very, very good point. Let's see. I want to go on to the topic of digital TV, and I don't know how much knowledge or expertise either of you have in this, but first, your very interesting article talking about an open source standard at WGBH, or I think more particularly the NCAM, the National Center for Accessible Media, is looking at. Of course, we did in a recent podcast a demo of a quasi-working set-top box in the UK. We also have a story here talking about Australia where they threw some boxes out and now they're recalling them and asking for some new ones. And I like this concept that they actually in Australia want the boxes to be accessible when they mandate the deployment of HDTV by 2013. But do any of you have any thoughts? Have you played with it? Do you have any interest in being able to control your TV, the program guide and just knowing what channel you're on and the show that's currently on and what's coming up next. Do any of you have any interest in that or know anything that's going on in that space? I know the NFB, I think, was working something on that. We haven't heard anything yet. What's going on?
I have a definite interest in this area because I would love to be able to look at the program guide and so forth and see what's on where and what it's about and, you know, and especially when it comes to movies. For instance, right now, if we want to watch a movie, you know, my wife has to run the show there, you know, and read to me what's going on and what the movie's about and so forth before we choose one. I can't do that. Now, I can, you know, I can call Dish Network and I think that they will push it out to me. I can't remember how that works, but, you know, I can do it that way if I want to, and I can have them read the different movie titles and what they're about and so forth. I'm definitely interested. I think this is something that we need to have. I think it was at CSUN a couple of years ago. Was it CSUN or Asia? I can't remember. We got to see one of those talking set-top boxes, and I was pretty impressed with it. It was something that I'd never seen before. I thought it gave quite a bit of information. Could it be better? I'm sure it could. But I'm definitely interested, and I don't know if the NFB is working with this or not. I couldn't really tell you for sure. Maybe Curtis could.
Oh, yeah, so I wrote a resolution about this a few years ago, and the National Federation of the Blind has a definite interest in promoting and ensuring non-visual access to set-top boxes, because that is the way now that you have access to your services and stuff through cable television. It's more than cable, it's satellite, and it's every form of entertainment. And, of course, the article I read, Mike, talked about the new Video and Communications Accessibility Act that has been passed, and believe me, that is sending repercussions all throughout industry because, you know, prior to this, remember the Telecommunications Act said that you have to make these things accessible only if it's readily achievable. The new standard is going to be you must make these things accessible unless you can prove that you cannot do it. And if, in fact, the promise of this law becomes reality, this will be absolutely a marvelous thing to be able to have access to your digital video recorders, to be able to read your program guides on the television or whatever. Because right now, televisions are becoming so smart and so interactive that if you don't have access to the controls and to the services, you're effectively cut out. Now, I realize, you know, one could argue entertainment is a lower priority than, say, employment, but the fact of the matter is the technology is moving so quickly that unless something is done, and the law has been passed, and the people I have, some of them I've heard from the FCC are very dedicated to getting this to be done. I'm interested to see what excuses industry will come up with to show how they can't do this, because I know that they're feeling this as a burden and that a lot of them are not really too happy about this. So we'll see what happens.
Well, one of the issues I see with the 21st Century Communications Act is the FCC is putting up all these, proposed rulemaking periods for comments, and we don't see a lot of input from folks because, I mean, we're not aware that these comments are coming up. No one's monitoring FCCgov.org every day to see these things come down. Is the NFB putting these things out on lists and saying, take this opportunity, because, you know, I'm afraid that we're going to miss some opportunities by not communicating what it is that we want or need. I mean, you know, they're going to mandate it from industry, but industry's not going to know what we as a community want and need these devices to do unless we speak up.
Yeah, you know, they've had some public hearings. I know at the CSUN conference this year, I went to a 3.5-hour session that was held. And I'm sure, you know, they're under some very tight timelines to produce rules. And frankly, if you look at all the stuff they deluge you with, you could spend a full-time job looking at these things and figure out how to comment on them, which doesn't relieve us as citizens of the responsibility of monitoring, because we absolutely do. I'm fairly confident, you know, that there are people in the NFB looking at this stuff right now. The question is, you know, how much can be done within the time frames that are available. And so I'm hoping that when the important stuff comes out, that we'll have a chance to badger industry, or at least to submit some public comment on some of this stuff, because that absolutely has to be done in order for this thing to work. The rules are going to be pivotal to making this promise of the law become reality.
Very good. Let's talk about this representative from Minnesota become the first representative to lead a state house forum. That brought up a question to me about how many blind or even low vision individuals do we have serving either in state or federal Congress just in the governments in general.
There is a member of parliament in England who is blind, I believe, and according to some historical research that my wife has done, there was a blind member of the federal Congress from Minnesota back in the early 20th century, and I guess maybe there are others, and of course we've heard of David Paterson, who was the governor of New York. So frankly, if you want my spin on it, the guy that was temporarily the Speaker of the House in Minnesota, who is a fairly competent blind individual, I'm kind of disappointed, actually, that the media made such a big deal about it, because to me, having somebody in politics or in a position like that is no big deal. It should not be regarded as a big deal by our society, and we should just figure that that's just the normal way of doing business. And so the fact that somebody chose to write an article about it is interesting in terms of the fact that it reveals, I think, a mindset which does exist in our society all over the place, which is it's exceptional for a blind person to have a leadership position. And I, for one, wish that that were not so. I would rather have people take it for granted that the blind, like everybody else, are going to have leadership positions no more or no less than other people.
Yeah, and certainly, we'd like that to become the rule rather than the exception. But this is interesting, and certainly, there are more folks. I know just when I myself wanted to go into radio broadcasting, and I knew of two other people, and I just thought that was it. And I started doing more research, and each person knew of others, and I realized that almost every state had someone that was either totally blind or with extremely limited vision using some form of magnification to do their job in the broadcast industry. So I know, AFB, and I assume even NFB has compilations of people in various industries, so that we realize what inroads, what industries we've integrated into, and maybe others that we have not.
I think this is showing us that although attitudes about blindness on the part of the general public are improved from what they were many years ago, some of that same stuff still exists. You know, people are just amazed that we can do this. You know, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who were amazed that Governor Paterson could do his job as a blind person, and I'm sure a lot of people are amazed that this gentleman was able to do his job as the speaker and so forth. So, you know, although things are improving, we have a long way to go yet, and one of these days, hopefully, we'll get there. But we still got a ways to go, and a lot of educating of the public.
I think that what we'll find is that blind people in politics is not all that unique throughout history. I know personally of at least three people who I know personally who successfully served in various state legislatures. And so, you know, to me, blindness and politics are just something that I don't regard as the high end. Now, if you think about a blind person who's a doctor, I think you'll find fewer of those. And if you think about a blind person as an airplane pilot, of course, you'll find even fewer of them. And so a blind person as a member of the legislature, I think historically has already been proven to be something that is doable. And you have to have the same brand of political acumen and persuasiveness and negotiation ability that any good politician must have in order to survive in that job. And that's not something I want to do, thank you very much, but I'm happy that there are others who are going to do it.
Okay, this next story is titled, Team Develops Electric Wheelchair That Can See for Its Blind User. So I don't have a lot of orientation with that. If either of you know individuals who, in addition to visual impairment, also have to move about using a wheelchair, and maybe the significance or the lack thereof with this story.
I know one person that is blind and uses a wheelchair. I think she still has some vision, and so is, you know, can still, you know, get around pretty much okay. But I can imagine that something like this would be of interest to her. But she's the only person I've ever met who is blind and is pretty much always in a wheelchair trying to function and maneuver.
I've met several blind people who use both electric and manual wheelchairs, and It is doable with a cane, but probably not as convenient. It might be nice if the wheelchair had ways of alerting you to things like stairs coming up or obstacles that are getting in your way. And so I'm sure for that particular, you know, person who's blind and in a wheelchair, you probably would like to have some technologies that would make the experience work a little more conveniently than it does right now. But as I say, I've known people who, some of them totally blind, who've used electric wheelchairs with a cane, and it does work. It's probably not as convenient as some of us would like it to be. And so I don't know how they would feel, frankly, about this technology, and I guess it'd be nice to ask the ones who are well adjusted to that sort of combination of disabilities to see what they would think. I'm always skeptical about stuff like this because people always want to develop things like electronic gizmos that will eliminate the need for a cane or a guide dog, vibrating shoes that will tell me when a wall is about to come in my path, and you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, those kinds of technologies are things that a lot of us have looked at and said, you know, enough already. We don't need that kind of stuff. Let's find other more practical uses for technology that will give us stuff that we really need.
Yeah, the preliminary test, they felt this had some promise for doorways and steps, as you had mentioned, but there were still some limitations, again, on things being high above or low, which means it could miss steps. So we'll certainly follow this story and see what comes out of it in the future. I'm all for, you know, trying some new aids, but you're right. Some of the stories I saw of GPS, you know, where you wear this big helmet and a couple piece of electronics, you know, on your belt or in your pocket, and then the shoes. And yeah, and of course, with all these things, what happens when the battery dies? If you don't have that cane, we don't have a dog, you're kind of stranded a little bit there. So those would be some real world concerns.
Electronic travel aids have been something that have been tried for the last 50 years. I can recall back in the mid-70s, the K spectacles. I also recall the $3,000 laser cane, which would help you to detect overhead obstacles and drop-offs by making this raucous buzzing noise. And I asked the person who was showing it to me, "So how much does it cost?" He said, "Oh, $3,000. I said, "Well, just give me $3,000 and I'll find a better use for it. I could go around the world, you know, back then for $3,000 and probably have a lot more fun than buying some electronic cane that has complicated technology that it's probably going to die in a week or something."
I remember that in the 70s, and by the time it made its, as you put it so well, obnoxious audio alert to let everyone around me know that it was detecting something, I was hearing it. I was hearing that same wall anyway. So yeah, I'm with you on that page. I do remember that device very well. A few plugs here for Cerotech, because we certainly made a few splashes in the month of May. Two things, actually. We released DocuScan Plus for the Mac, making it a multi-platform OCR solution, and we were very excited about that. So I'll give you the chance to or not to talk about that and or our release of iBlink Radio in the Android space. So we're at Cerotech certainly very excited to be truly a multi-platform company now, having something in the Windows, Macintosh, iOS, and Android spaces, because we really believe that someone who just stays in one OS may really be limiting themselves in the future as we go for more portable devices running different operating systems than just your typical Microsoft Windows that we've come to know.
Well, being a user of DocuScan Plus myself, I got to tell you that I'm delighted that it now will work in the Mac platform. It is awesome. It's a good thing. DocuScan Plus, I have found to be extremely usable. I love the way it does PDF files and the way, you know, the batch scanning, which I've done, and so forth. And I just think it's a great piece of software, and it works wonderfully. And I would say to anyone, if you've got a Mac and you haven't gotten DocuScan Plus yet, you should do this.
I would agree. I think having a scanning tool that is multi-platform is a splendid idea, and particularly having the OCR work done in the cloud means that you can improve the OCR technology without having to reinstall software. So kudos to Cerotech for doing something that's really, I think, pretty innovative.
Not only that, but scan something on the Mac and then retrieve it from your Windows computer. Now, some folks have privacy concerns, and that's why you always have the option to not save it if you like or password protect it. So those things have been implemented because they're justifiable concerns. But the cloud is the future, the concept of doing something on one device and then retrieving that information from another device, because hardware will fail. And like someone put it so well, it's not really your computer that is of value. It's the data that's on that device. And when the device fails, where are you? If you don't have access to that data at the end of the day. So we certainly appreciate the kind words from folks out there who are really using the product. And by all means, check it out.
Well, I would say that one of the things about cloud computing, of course, is in its initial stages, a lot of people were very skeptical who were blind because they were afraid of it, because in the early days we didn't have accessible cloud solutions. So, what you folks are doing is essentially proving that the cloud can be a tool which generates accessible solutions for the blind. And, the more of that we have, the less skepticism we can have about technological developments further on down the road. And so I think that's absolutely a splendid idea. Of course, there are security and privacy concerns with anything else. I, for example, run a backup program, in the cloud that backs up my stuff. And people said, well, aren't you worried that your stuff is going to, get hacked or something? And I said, well, I don't think so, because my belief is that the thing I'm using knows how to encrypt the stuff so that I'm the only one that can use it. And if my faith in them dies, of course, I'll cease being a customer and go do something else. But I think that the cloud is here. I think that tools that use the cloud will become more ubiquitous. And you're absolutely correct, Mike. Multiple operating systems and platforms are the order of the day, because mobility and having flexibility and access to your information is really where it's at.
And one more thing I would say, just like system access, DocuScan Plus is so straightforward and easy to use. You can scan, you can read, you can save, and that's basically what you want to do. There's not all the other bells and whistles that some of the other OCR packages have. Not that they're not good and fun and so forth, but this is a straightforward package. It's very simple to teach someone, and this is what I like about this product.
Well, very good, folks. Appreciate those comments, and check it out at DocuScanPlus.com. Well, this one that J.J. Meadow posted on Twitter, and certainly got a lot of comments, makes blind people look really bad. No stoves, help with bathing, and talking about a facility in Chicago where blind folks can go and live if they like, have a one-bedroom studio apartment, and basically be taken care of. So my question to the two of you is this really common? Do you have a lot of these in cities and almost every state? And, since you have the affiliation with the NFB, have they been involved in either trying to get these, places to not just do things for people, but teach them and improve their independent living skills, looking at the impact, at the negative impact that they could have on the blind community, or people put there because their parents just didn't take the time to teach them these skills, or because maybe they have multiple disabilities and blindness is the one that you happen to hear about?
Earlier I was talking about public attitudes and misconceptions about blindness, and this couldn't speak more clearly to that point. These guys, they're caretakers. That's what they are. And here's the thing that concerns me about this, and that is, there are still people today, families who have blind adults in them. They don't know what to do with these people. Maybe somebody's just lost their sight. Maybe grandpa's just lost his vision because of macular degeneration. What are we going to do with grandpa? Well, here, we can just take him over to this facility here, and they'll take good care of grandpa. We won't have to ever worry about him again. We can make, maybe they'll pay his way or whatever they want to do, make whatever financial arrangements. I'm really concerned about this. This really speaks to the misconceptions that some people have. There's no stoves in those apartments, as far as I could tell from the description. And, I mean, God, blind people can cook. And then did you notice in there it talks about teaching them to weave? You know, oh, for crying out loud. You know, we did this at the school for the blind where I went 40, 50 years ago. And here we go, right back to that same era. And this really concerns me.
Likewise, I fought the good fight in my state when I used to live in Minnesota, because we had a home for the blind, and it was quite a divisive thing within the Federation in that state for a good many years. And us younger people thought that having segregated housing for the specific characteristic of blindness was absolutely unconscionable and not necessary. You know, in our society today, there is a lot of talk about assisted living facilities for senior citizens. This is a common thing now, and they're offering a whole lot of stuff like memory management services and all kinds of care and that sort of stuff. The services that they were talking about at this place in Chicago sound very much like the kind of services that you'd offer for senior citizens. And I would argue that even for senior citizens, there is a potential to have too much care and too much paternalism and too much of all of that. You still have a few blind homes around the country. The one that comes to mind is the Badger Home in Wisconsin. Iowa once had a home for blind women, or it was called a home for sightless women, I think, but that has gone now. And so the homes for the blind, segregated housing concept, has actually died over the years. And so for an organization to start talking about doing this now, in one sense, makes no business sense, because you're narrowing you're limiting your population if you say that this is a facility just for people who are low vision or visually impaired or blind. And it also pisses off a lot of blind people who will take exception to having themselves being characterized as people who don't cook and who need 24-hour-a-day care and all of that. You know, and one can make lots of off-color jokes about facilities like this, which I'm not going to do. Because I just think places like that are history. They should be historic, and they should be gone, along with all the other things that were bad about blindness back in the Middle Ages.
Well, great points there. Michael, of course, mentioning that reminds me, I didn't even think about it, kind of forgot about it, you know, when attending the Illinois School for the Visually Impaired, a term I'm not really fond of, visually impaired. I think there's better terms. But anyway, right next to the Lego blocks, which challenged your creativity, was a nice little, all the tools for making potholders. Weave, weave, weave. Under, over, yeah, certainly. Wow, let's, I guess, open up here for questions and see if anyone has any comments that you'd like to ask either Curtis Chong or Michael Barber this evening. And while we do that, certainly we'll also look at a couple other topics here as well that we have for some of the top access technology news for the month of May. Looks like Bureau of Engraving and Printing has actually launched an app for the iPhone to read money, but apparently it's not that good from what I'm hearing. Have any of you played with it? Any thoughts on that?
I've got a blog. I put a blog up. I did a video and everything. It's awful. The iNote is the worst of all the money identification systems that have been developed for the blind. The one that is free, that came from the government, is the bottom line worst program ever developed. It doesn't even take advantage of the video interface on the iPhone. You know, it's an iPhone app. You have to snap the picture for it to take a picture of the money, and more than half the time, you're going to get error, reposition camera, and it'll all in all be a totally frustrating experience. You compare that with the $2 app, or $1.99 to be true, the Looktel money reader that runs on the iPhone, and there is absolutely no comparison. The thing that the government is a travesty and an embarrassment for our tax dollars to have been spent on developing something as awful as that.
Okay. Well, my only comment is that I don't see how they could have possibly tested this with any savvy blind person. I don't know what they did. It's just normal government mess up as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, I work for the government. I take exception to that. I don't necessarily think government is a bad idea. I just think it's unfortunate that the fine folks at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing allowed an app like this, as bad as it is, to be released into the public arena. No, I mean, they released it after the other one came out, and so anybody with any sense at all would have pulled it off the market knowing what the other thing does.
And did any of you, either at CSUN or elsewhere, see they were doing a test and actually paying people? I got screwed, though. I didn't get any money. But I actually got paying people to do a test. They were doing, testing some different tactile markings for currency.
Oh, no. Let's get real. They were giving shredded money. They were paying you. They were giving you shredded money that you couldn't spend. And there was a guy there. Tactile money is in our future. There's no question about it. They're going to be. They were trying different ways of marking bills by touch, and they wanted to see how people would react to the different methods. And so I participated in some of those things, and I had a good long talk with the guy. And you know, I started out with the assumption. I said to him, you know, really, when you think about it, blind people have been managing paper money forever. There's some blind people who got up and and sued the government, of course, and won. And where the court said that the money has to be made tactically accessible, so that's why the Treasury Department is doing what it's doing. And so, yes, they were doing testing to see which ways of marking bills would work, and what they also said to me was that for people with neuropathy, for whom the touching thing wouldn't work, that they would offer some kind of free access or coupon so that you could buy some kind of usable bill identifier. Frankly, my personal opinion is that this is a lot of fuss made about nothing, and I've been managing money all my life, and yes, there are times when I wish I could read the bills independently, but it hasn't been such a traumatic experience that I would want to redesign the money system and spend billions of dollars at a time when our national debt is out of sight.
Well, that's true. Of course, also the money system, currency system, has changed about 6 times in the last 10 years. They don't always change all the notes at once. Sometimes it's just one or two denominations at a time. One of my thoughts is it might be a deterrent, another way to detect counterfeit bills, although, again, people would have to know, the markings and so forth. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. They certainly had a couple different technologies. One was simple and very easy to read, and they had some very fancy numerals that, to me, were complicated. But so anyway, that was there. Let's see. We do have a text question. Okay, someone mentions the Sendero app, look around app for Android. I think they went about $5, and there was some concern if people would pay that much for it, that people using Android are less likely to spend money on apps and maybe are more inclined for the free applications out there. But yes, that's certainly out. Again, because it just came out in June, we kind of consider that a June story. We're staying in the space of things that physically happened in the month of May. But that is certainly there for those who like what Sendero offers and want to try it out on the Android to see what it does beyond kind of what Google offers in that space anyway.
Part of the problem with Android is you don't have a consistent accessibility solution yet that you can point to that gives you broad access to everything in the Android platform, and so I am hoping, because one of the cool things about Android is that every phone company in the United States has Android-based phones, right? So if we could count on something working for the blind, and there are a couple products that do give you access to the phone service that are available now, one of them you've got to pay for. I think that the Android platform is the place to be looking at for the next accessibility successes that we're going to enjoy. I have used the Sendero Look Around app on the iPhone, and I paid my $5 for it, and I thought it was money well spent, compared to, I've spent more money for other apps on the iPhone. Sendero does have the unique distinction of knowing how blind people travel and providing information in a non-visually friendly way, in a way that makes sense for the blind traveler. So, that's my plug for Sendero. I guess I don't work for them, so I think they've done a really good job on the places where they're working right now.
I guess going back to the money, you got a lot of retweets and a lot of comments on your article about how can the blind identify money? Curtis Chong, the expert, tells us how.
Well, yeah, I demonstrated, first of all, that the primary way that a totally blind person would identify money is using the simple expedient of folding. But I also pointed out that there was a place for technologies which would tell you what your bills were. If somebody gives you a stack of bills that you can't read and you want to sort them out conveniently, and I showed the three ways that I have in my possession for identifying money. I put the iBill out there for those of us that don't have an iPhone. $99 gives you a pretty good money identifier. I put out the Looktel money reader and showed how easy that one, if you had an iPhone, you could use that to just wave it in front of a bill and it would tell you what it was. And then I showed the iNote. So you know, the one from the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. And so I showed all three of those technologies and gave, I thought, a graphic demonstration of how well they did or did not work, and also kept those in the context of the value of the folding technique, which I still think is extremely useful.
Now, what about the story that says U.S. Government 2.0, what does that mean, the Obama administration, basically ditches BlackBerry and adopts Apple, in particular iPads? Are there any security concerns? Certainly great for accessibility, but any thoughts on that?
I saw a security bulletin from our state security people here in Iowa that said that the iPad was remarkably easy to hack into, I regret to say. And so I don't know what the thinking was behind the abandonment. I'm sure there are people on both sides capitalizing on this one way or the other. Those who hate BlackBerry are jumping up and down for joy, and those who like BlackBerry are probably disappointed. I will say that from the blindness point of view, of course, it's very clear that the iPad is a far more accessible platform than the BlackBerry, despite all the work that has gone on to try to make that more accessible. And I want something that is as convenient as BlackBerry to use if I have to get email while I'm on the road. And right now, I don't see too many options to do it in the BlackBerry space at this point.
Okay, my final story for this evening, as we run out of time, is this article saying that appeals court lifts the stem cell research injunction. Do any of you have thoughts about this concept of stem cell research being used to eliminate current issues like cancer, or even used for the development or recreation of limbs, or maybe even the restoration of eyesight? And you have thoughts about stem cell research? It's a pretty controversial topic, but a lot of potential there.
I'm going to stay away from the concept of stem cell research because I don't want to get to the debate of the pros and cons. But what I will say is I certainly favor research which would allow us to do a better job of restoring sight, if that's at all possible. What I don't favor are ideas which say, put your life on hold while you wait for the next technique. You know, for example, there was a research done on retina stimulation, how you could restore some sight in damaged retinas, with some kind of electronic technology. And the thing that I believe is that while that research is certainly valuable, I would really feel sorry for somebody who had lost their vision because of retinal damage, for that person to wait around for 20 years for that research to come to fruition and do nothing with their life. That, to me, is the real tragedy that could happen.
Yeah, I agree with Curtis. I would like to see, people get their sight restored if that's at all possible. But I'm thinking along the lines, too, of some of us who are diabetic, getting our pancreas restored somehow. I'm sure stem cell research could play an important part there. And I heard a year or so ago that they were working on things like that. So I think any kind of research is a good idea, and I think we should take advantage of the knowledge that we have. I did have one question. I know we're running short on time, but are we going to get to make a plug for our particular divisions coming up at the NFB conventions, or no?
Oh, certainly we'll give you an opportunity to do that as we put the wraps on it. By all means, either you get a chance to comment on anything that your project you're currently working on, or your closing comments to talk about anything that you're doing. And I, on that note, we'll start with you, Michael.
I'm the president of the Assistive Technology Trainers Division of the National Federation of the Blind, and we are having our division meeting. It is Tuesday evening. That's July 5th, if I have my dates correct. From 6:30 to 10 at the Convention Hotel in Orlando, and we are going to be dealing this year with some really interesting topics, one of which should spark an interesting debate, is whether the advantages or disadvantages, as far as the ribbons are concerned in Microsoft Office, for instance, should a person use the virtual ribbon that Freedom Scientific has developed, or should they just stay with the ribbons as they are now and learn them? There are people who have strong feelings on both sides of this issue, and I'm looking forward to the debate when it happens, and that's going to be at our division meeting. Connie LeBlond from Rigel Technologies had planned to be at our convention. Unfortunately, Robert LeBlond has been taken critically ill. According to her, you know, will recover, but it's going to take some time, and she needs to stay with him. So she's going to give us an MP3 recording of her presentation, so we can at least hear what Rigel Technologies has to offer as far as their tutorials and so forth. I've taken one of their classes, and it was pretty good. So those are a couple of the things we're going to be talking about. We have a lot of instructors in that class and in the division, and these are from our NFB private center, some from government agencies, you know, and so we have very spirited discussions. Last year, particularly, we had quite a spirited discussion, and I think people got a lot out of it. And I would invite you to come and join us. Hopefully you would come and join the division if you're interested in improving instruction of blind people in assistive technology.
Okay, actually we've extended invitations to both organizations to come on and talk about the highlights and things that they'll be doing at the respective conventions so that folks can get an idea of what happens at conventions and decide if they wish to pursue a greater level of participation. But Curtis, your final thoughts tonight, sir?
So the National Federation of the Blind in Computer Science will be having its meeting on Tuesday, July 5th from 1 to 5 p.m. And there are two things I want to bring to people's attention. First of all is we're having a segment put on by Cerotech, and the idea there being to talk about some of the cool things that you folks are doing to promote access to information and services. For example, the accessible event suite of software that you folks have, as well as, in my opinion, the remote incident and remote access manager stuff, which I regard as a really important tool for network administrators and others who are working with people with diagnosed problems. That's one item we're going to have. We're also going to devote two program items on Android accessibility to Android phones, and we have a presentation from Adobe. Pros and cons of Adobe, you know, they're known for PDF, but they also have lots of other programs which a lot of people are being very frustrated by because they're not as accessible as they should be, and Adobe, like Microsoft, has good and bad things about it. And so this would be your chance to talk with them about your experiences, if you have them, with some of the programs like Adobe Connect, for example, and the Audition, which is their audio editor, and that kind of thing. So those are snippets of the program items that we're going to be having at our division meeting.
So I assume folks can learn more. Just go to nfb.org and click on the 2010 or 2011 convention and find out about each of these entities and all other events taking place. Well, that's going to put the wraps on Tech Chat 104. We thank you again, Curtis Chong and Michael Barber, for your great insights on these news stories, what we believe would be some of the most interesting or certainly thought-provoking events to transpire in the month of May for 2011. Again, we invite you to join us next week, June 9th. We will have Tech Chat 105. We'll talk about improving the quality of sleep, which in turn improves our quality of productivity so we can be more productive and members of society and just keep up the positive attitude and just have better relationships with our family and friends and coworkers and so forth.
This concludes another Cerotalk Tech Chat powered by Accessible Event, a product of Cerotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.